everybody. Welcome to DLC. My name is Christian Spicer. Kanata is off celebrating his honeymoon after getting married. So that means today DLC stands for Doing It Like Kanata. Because it is my job to serve as your main host, which means Doing It Like Kanata is the only time you will hear me force the words DLC into a sentence of some form or fashion, because I'm not Jeff and I'm not going to play his silly games. On today's show, we're going to talk about how great Destiny is, and that's all. No, we have a great show for you today. Joining me, a buddy from San Diego that we were both at Game Rant for a time, Anthony Taormina. How are you, sir?
I'm good, and I would like to stress that I like nothing on my hot dog.
Oh, great.
Nothing on my hot dog.
No ketchup, no mustard, just pure unadulterated animal parts.
Correct.
Anthony is an editor at Game Rant, writer at Screen Rant, and also has movie reviews over at Film Fracture. And joining us to round out this awesome threesome for this special Kanata-less episode of DLC is Liz Reed from Cuddles in Rage, and also just launched her own podcast, People I Think Are Cool. Liz, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing awesome. Thank you for having me on. And I would like to say that I like everything on my hot dog. I just like load it up as much as possible. And I don't understand the plain hot dog. That seems very boring to me.
Really?
I like the purity of the hot dog. It'll come into focus later. This whole analogy.
What's everything? Jalapenos, Liz?
Yeah, man, just like dump it on. I'm also one of those people, when I have ice cream, I just try and like shove as much possible into my ice cream because I hate plain vanilla. So I guess I just kind of like take that into every piece of food that I eat.
I might do a chili and a cheese, but I mean, really, then I'm just eating chili and there just happens to be a hot dog in it.
Man, a plain hot dog is really gross. And so Liz puts everything on her hot dog. I say that plain hot dogs are gross. It means, Anthony, that you're officially wrong.
Yeah, you're
well,
out.
Well, when we start talking about some video games, you might love me, but I'm glad you alienated me right out the gate.
Well, maybe we won't get to video games. Maybe hot dog gate is too big of something we can't. Guys, this show, you guys, of course, get to participate. You can call in at 512-518-5714. Again, that is 512-518-5714. And of course, if you have something you want us to talk about, you can submit stories and topics all week by using the hashtag DLCSOTW. And you can join the conversation. You can also point stuff over at our subreddit, which is reddit.com/r/5x5DLC. And if we're done with the hot dog talk, I do think it's time to dive into story of the week. Oh, that's right. No music. It's Christian's show. We're not doing theme songs this week. Nope. We're just going to talk more about hot dogs. Anthony, hot. No, let's get into story of the week. What started off as maybe a slow-ish news week. I think a lot of stuff has developed, over the weekend, and things are coming in Monday morning. There's some stuff that maybe hasn't quite posted as we're recording this, so we can guess to it or whatever. But Liz, as someone that I haven't talked video games with in a very, very long time, I'm curious what you think the biggest story of the week is.
Oh, gosh. Honestly, it's a little controversial.
Okay, dive in. That's fine.
Okay. When I was kind of looking things up, I was really caught off guard by that ISIS trailer that was compared to Grand Theft Auto.
Uh-huh. Okay. So give people a little bit of background, people that maybe haven't watched it.
Yeah. It's like uncomfortable even talking about it. It's basically like a trailer recruiting video for people to go and fight with ISIS. And they treated it a lot like Grand Theft Auto or Call of Duty. And it's like very uncomfortable to watch. And it kind of takes me a step back. Have you seen the trailer?
I have watched it. Anthony, did you watch it?
I have not.
So I don't recommend people go and watch this per se, because like you said, Liz, it is something that, you know, it's not enjoyable, if that makes sense. You know, it's not something that I think we should, you know, run up the flagpole and wave around. I guess my question for you, Liz, is do you think something like that, like, is this video games propaganda being used to, you know, are kids so affected by video games today, or young adults or whatever, people so affected by video games today, that something like this is an effective marketing tool for, you know, warfare? Or is it just, to some extent, sensationalized media, you know, trying to capture this thing because maybe it's a slow, even though there's plenty of there's always plenty of horrible news going on in the world. Is it something that the media is grabbing for because, hey, video games?
Yeah, I mean, and that's what made me stop and think about it, and why I would say it was like the top story for me I think that is kind of like feeding into video games. And you hear so much about like, oh, violent video games, like they cause children to be like super violent. And then I look at myself and my childhood, like I personally lean towards like super violent video games. And I even have debates with my husband, like whenever you get a choice to be like good or evil, like I prefer to be evil. But I don't think that like I'm an evil person because I go that route. My husband toy is just like, why would you do that? I'm like, oh, I just want to know. So I feel like it makes me sad though, because I do feel like if somebody wanted to like run with it and then just be like, oh, this is like proof to show that like video games cause violence. You know, it's just, we've been fighting such a long battle to prove that it's like, no, we can separate like entertainment from reality, that I just think this just takes gaming a step back, and it made me really sad.
Yeah. Anthony, do you have, you know, thoughts on kind of, you know, the violence of video games, or maybe using violent video games or that style to market maybe other things or to create a link? Or is that something that you really maybe haven't given much thought, or is that something that you kind of wrestle with?
Yeah, I kind of try and stay out of not necessarily controversial topics, but yeah, violence in video games for me is something where, you know, I don't personally agree that, you know, violence in video games begets actual violence. But you know, I don't know enough about, you know, other people and how it affects them, whatnot. I just don't care what other people, how it affects other people. I'm a terrible person like that. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, I don't know. It was an interesting thing, but to me, it was just very bizarre. Or hearing about it. Yeah, I just chose not to watch it.
I think in the chat right now, MC Fisticuffs has a good point and something that I agree with, where she said, video games has gone past the niche market now and is now a real household entertainment tool. Unfortunately, this is a side effect of that. And I think I largely agree. I mean, I think as video games become more popular, and they're already extremely popular, but you see more and more, you know, other types of media or other things latching on to a video game-esque style presentation to promote whatever it is, you know, whether it's something horrible like warfare or terrorism, or something like the newest movie or book or music video coming out using a presentation that they think will resonate with, you know, those types of people, because that's what they're trying to do, right, is get their word or their brand or their beliefs out there. And I think we'll see more and more, you know, video game style approach or cut trailers and stuff like that, potentially using that approach. And I think it is kind of just a side effect of, you know, games going mainstream. I mean, I don't know when the CSI episode will come where they play in a game of Minecraft like they did with Second Life and all that stuff. But, you know, it definitely has penetrated popular culture in a bigger way. What were you going to say, Anthony?
I was just agreeing with you. Yeah. I do think there will be an episode where Minecraft is TV show.
Yeah, and Kent Doggy Dog said, you know, is this kind of like the U.S. Army using America's Army game for recruitment? And yeah, it's certainly not the first time that, you know, a military or a group that, I don't, you know, obviously I don't think the American military is anything like ISIS or ISIL, however you want to say it. Fortunately or unfortunately, it's not the first time that video games or video game type things have been used in a war or terrorist recruitment effort, and I don't think it'll be the last. My biggest issue, though, Anthony, is you saying that you avoid controversial topics, but yet you said you don't put anything on your hot dog.
I'm just saying I don't gravitate. I'm throwing myself into quite a pickle with this. No pickles on my hot dog, though.
Yeah, right.
It has more to do with I find that no matter how you lean one way or not, like putting your opinion out there, especially on the internet, is it never feels good. So I just let those things happen. You know, I ultimately think, yes, bad idea using anything to recruit people for what is seen as a, you know, not a good idea, but I'm not supporting. I have to do so much backtracking now.
This is the most wishy-washy taking a stand of something. I think we've just discovered that Anthony's running for president in 2047.
I don't like things on my hot dog.
I like to start it off strong. So
we're gonna dive right into it for sure. Well, Anthony, here,
matter.
We'll let you totally change the subject. Yes. You can go wherever you want. What, my friend, do you think is the story of the week?
I think that this the story of the week, representing Jeff a little bit, because personally I'm not as invested in VR or as excited about it as he is, but I do think that the Oculus VR new prototype, codenamed Crescent Bay, is the story of the week because for several reasons.
We'll back up and just explain briefly if you can.
I wasn't going to explain those reasons. I was just saying.
Describe what Crescent Bay is.
So there was an event over the weekend. It was called Oculus Connect. It was basically a convention for Oculus enthusiasts, VR enthusiasts who focus on the Oculus Rift headset. And at the event, the Oculus VR company unveiled their latest prototype, which they are codenaming Crescent Bay. The previous one was called Crystal Cove, so, you know, like a naming thing. And it's exciting to me as just kind of like an outsider because it's got some features, if you'd like me to get into those.
I can certainly go through them as well. I mean, I think it is. And I think what's interesting about this, too, is that I don't know if it was last week's show or a couple of weeks, you know, Jeff brought up how, you know, Oculus says that there is a consumer ready version, or it was leaked that a consumer ready version is coming out sooner than maybe many of us had expected, you know, maybe coming out this coming next summer. And I think, you know, the release of this new dev version or beta version or whatever this version is kind of a surprise to people because, you know, everybody had heard rumors about DevKit 2, and they brought DevKit 2 to trade shows and E3 and GDC before it was officially unveiled. In this, they kind of had their, you know, the meeting over the weekend, and then it was out, and there are pictures of it, and it improves, I think improves a lot of what, you know, even from DevKit 2 was. And DevKit 2 with the HD screens was such a big, I don't know, Liz, have you had any Oculus eyes on time with Oculus?
No, I haven't. And like the whole virtual reality thing, like I feel like such a wiener because it just reminds me of Lawnmower Man. It makes me feel so dated.
I agree that there is a weirdness to it, but I think the Eve demo made me a believer seeing that in HD. It's pretty great. So yeah, Anthony, why don't you walk through some of the new hardware changes that Crescent Bay has?
Okay, so the previous Crystal Cove prototype had these little LED lights on the front that the development kit 2 or DK2 that came out, it had sort of like a LED permeable cover on it, so you couldn't see them. But when they first unveiled it, it has on the front. Now this new prototype has them on the back, so it's got like more of a head harness. It goes over the top of your head and around the side, and then there's a plate on the back with a couple LED lights. And what that's good for is 360 degrees motion tracking. So before, if you know, you turned the back of your head to the motion tracker for the Oculus, it wouldn't know where you went, more or less. Now it knows you can kind of turn your head completely in virtual space. And then on top of that, I think the bigger feature is built-in audio, built-in headphones. So there are two headphones that are built into the device that'll pipe audio straight from the Rift to these headphones, but they can move out of the way. So they are not a requirement, because one of the things Jeff has talked about on the show is if those headphones had been not so good, it might ruin the device altogether. Oculus has said that they're trying to, you know, make the great audio experience match up with the visuals, but if people wanted to use their Turtle Beaches or whatever, they can. So I think that's super smart, and I think the headphones itself is indicative that we're getting there. You know, they put the headphones on, they put the 360. There aren't so many more things they can do as far as like checklist items to get us to.
No, totally. I agree. And I think the inclusion of headphones is a big add for the device. And I also agree that, you know, being able to not use them if you have a sweet pair of cans or something you want to use instead is an important option for the device. But to sell something that's going to be hundreds of dollars that isn't an out-of-the-box, all-in-one experience, I think would leave some consumers wanting, right? If you put on this, you get your sweet new Oculus and you put it on and you don't have any sound, or it's like the tingy sound out of the back of your computer or something like that. So the inclusion of headphones, I think, is pretty cool. I want to take a couple of calls. We're going to take a couple of calls for people's, if they think something is a cool story as well. A little change from, you know, what Jeff does. Because, hey, Jeff's in Italy. He's eating gelato and pizza, and he doesn't care about what we're doing. But before that, I want to thank one of our sponsors making DLC possible. We've talked about him before, and it's Harry's. I actually have a freshly shaved Harry's face right now. Got up early this morning and keeping my cheeks nice and smooth. I mean, for a lot of people, shaving isn't something people look forward to. It's uncomfortable. It's annoying. It's expensive. But that's where Harry's comes in. Started by two guys who wanted a better product without paying an arm and a leg. And they make their own blades. They purchased the factory in Germany where the blades are made. High quality, high performing. And they're made by shaving experts. It's a great shave. I've had a lot of fun using it, and yes, fun, because it's nice, it's elegantly designed, it's pretty to look at, the packaging, everything about the product, in my experience, has worked, and they have a couple of new products that they've added to their shave supplies. They have a foaming gel for $8. Some people, you know, wanted more options in terms of the cream or the shaving lubricant, for lack of a better term. They have a foaming shaving gel that they've added. And they also have a aftershave moisturizer, because some people have dry skin and that helps out. And so why pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades when it's only half the price at Harry's? On average, an everyday shaver saves $150 each year on blades using Harry's. They also have a satisfaction guarantee. So with that, as a supporter of this show, why not let Harry's know if you are looking for a different shaving alternative? Let them know that we sent you, and you can get $5 off if you use our special coupon code DLC. Easy to remember, because that's the name of this show. On your first purchase, it's Harry's, HARRYS.com. Enter coupon code DLC at checkout for $5 off. We want to thank Harry's for supporting us. And if you're looking to change up your shaving routine, hopefully you will consider them. And before I dive in with my story of the week, man, it's good to go last. I'm going to jump on the line here, answer a couple of calls, see if someone has something they want to throw out for us to discuss. I have a call here on the line from 661. Hello, where are you calling from? What is your name? And what do you think his story of the week is?
Hi, this is Michael from Amsterdam calling again. My story is not like, you know, that political, but I saw this over the weekend because there's TGS, of course, happening in Japan. And one of the craziest things apparently that came out from that is not that Final Fantasy 15 is actually in development. No, it's the fact that Tetsuya Nomura is no longer the director of Final Fantasy 15. So I thought that was pretty interesting and crazy that after all these years, they finally, like, I don't think that he quit. I think Square Enix were like, yeah, you're taking way too long with this project. Time to put someone else on there and just have this stuff get done because it is taking way too long.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for the call. And let's just dive in there on the Final Fantasy 15 news. Liz, are you a Final Fantasy person? Is that a series that is near and dear to your heart?
No, I never got into that series. I know everybody else has, and I just feel like maybe I should dive into it, but I've just heard so many stories about past versions, like taking hours upon hours to get into it. And it just seems like that would be like an uphill battle for me at this point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, each Final Fantasy is, of course, a game unto its own, unless it's a versus or, part two or spinoff of the original kind of thing. But that's kind of one of the things I've liked about the series is that just because you didn't play two doesn't mean you can't play three. They're not connected in that way. But I do totally understand that they are going to be a time suck and a grind and definitely a JRPG for better or worse. And yeah, if you've passed on it for this long of your gaming career, I don't think it's time to say, Liz, you got to get up on some Final Fantasy. Final Fantasy 15 will be out in 2041. And you need to take the plunge. Anthony, are you a big JRPG guy?
I'm not a JRPG guy, but I am a Final Fantasy fan. I've played probably close to all of them, save for like the earlier ones. I've played them, but I haven't made my way through them. I am very much looking forward to 15 because I was so done with the whole 13 sequel shenanigans. A lot of people in the chat are talking about that we should talk about the footage, and I was going to talk about the footage. I think the Final Fantasy 15 footage looks crazy. Visually, it looks impressive. The combat looks so kind of more action focused, but I think it still looks great. I think the game itself is exciting. But yeah, specifically about the Nomura stuff, what's exciting to me, I don't necessarily know if he's been relieved from duty, as some people are saying, or that, he was taking so long. I think Square Enix is well aware that they have something even bigger waiting or planned in Kingdom Hearts 3. And so they're saying, okay, move on to Kingdom Hearts 3. We need to start getting this going because I think if we're pairing the two, they have Final Fantasy and they have Kingdom Hearts, whereas Final Fantasy has sort of soured people over the last couple games. Kingdom Hearts, people still love Kingdom Hearts. So Kingdom Hearts is more a guaranteed hit. And I think they want to get his hands all over that.
That's interesting. I like that you're kind of throwing out a micro conspiracy theory. Well, they're taking him off of Final Fantasy 15, i.e. the biggest franchise that this company is known for, to have him work on Kingdom Hearts 3.
I mean, there's only a few Kingdom Hearts. There's only been two true console releases, and there's been handhelds and re-releases and stuff. But I mean, I was in that PlayStation conference, and when they showed off Final Fantasy 15, there were cheers. When they showed off Kingdom Hearts 13, people stood up and were like going to, throw things at the screen. They were so excited. I think Kingdom Hearts, as far as Square Enix is concerned, is a bigger franchise to them.
Oh, man. Wow.
No, I agree. I'm into Final it. Fantasy, I'm into it.
13, 13-2, Lightning Returns, 13-3, that kind of turned a lot of people off. But in most people's eyes, mine included, I also enjoy Kingdom Hearts. Kingdom Hearts has done no wrong in terms of the mainline series. So I'm more, if you were saying which one was, I would pick Kingdom Hearts. Granted, that 15 footage looks really great, and I'm still excited for it. But if you're going to take Nomura, like one of your big guys, and he can only pick one of them, I think they made the right choice.
Man, you heard it here first. Both Liz and Anthony say Final Fantasy is a horrible franchise and should be canceled and no more game should come out in it. And Kingdom Hearts is the best game ever made and all games made in the future should somehow be related to the Kingdom Hearts franchise. That is crazy.
I mean, you think that's funny, but people love these games. Like, people are crazy about Kingdom Hearts. So I'm
obviously joking, and I, you know, agree about the fan reaction to Kingdom Hearts 3, but I wonder if that was just a, you know, fanboy is too harsh of a word, but very specific audience going crazy for a very specific game. Granted, Kingdom Hearts does have, you know, reach of the Disney property and stuff like that, but I just feel like Final Fantasy is such a brand and such a name. And that if people are really waiting for another great Final Fantasy, and I think it just has name recognition that Kingdom Hearts doesn't. Like, if it's on a shelf, I still think of Final Fantasy 15.
I disagree 100%.
Well. Why? So back it up.
Erroneous on all counts.
Back it up. Just because there hasn't been as many? Like, that's enough of a reason?
I mean, when they make jokes about games that people say, like, is there going to be another? It's Half-Life and then Kingdom Hearts, I think. And, like, that in the zeitgeist, I think Kingdom Hearts has surpassed Final Fantasy, if only because it's more rare. And the series itself, even Square Enix has come out and say, look, we're aware that lots of people, like, after 13 was okay, but it's an MMO. After the flop of 14 as a follow-up MMO, then the 3 13s, and then canceling the 13 spinoffs, turning one of the 13 spinoffs into this 15. You know, a lot of people are just sour on it. I think if you put them next to each other and showed them to people who are fans of Square Enix and said, which one would you choose? I think they would pick Kingdom Hearts.
And so you guys don't think that maybe Kingdom Hearts, that fandom, that fever pitch, isn't akin to the buzz that Snakes on a Plane got or Scott Pilgrim got before theatrical release, and then it comes out and it turns out that, you know, 10,000 or, you know, whatever it is, 100,000 super vocal people are all the people that are excited about this game, and that it kind of just, it does okay, but it doesn't do mind-blowingly well. Granted,
I mean, Kingdom Hearts does well. I don't think it does wrong.
1 and 2 did very well at retail. They are very big games. I'm not trying to dismiss them, but I don't know. I do think that Final Fantasy still has more cash. Liz, you also think I'm stupid?
I don't think you're stupid.
Thank you. Good answer. I just think that
Kingdom Hearts, like, speaks to me. I mean, I even remember one of my honeymoons, like, instead of hanging out, like, I just played Kingdom Hearts all day. So it's very near and dear. And I even remember in Kingdom Hearts 2, like, staying up until 3 a.m. playing, like, the Tron level, being, like, scared. I was like, I feel like a weenie because I'm scared of Tron. So I just think that, you know, it's relatable. Like, even if you haven't played the game before, you see all these characters that you know. And I think if they create a level based on, you know, a movie, a Disney movie that you love, then it's just like, oh man, here's a way that, you know, I can, like, interact with these characters where I've never been able to interact with them before. And I just think they do a beautiful job of, like, bringing in all these different brands into one setting. And it's addictive. I'm looking forward to it because, yeah, I haven't played one in a very, very, very long time. And so I feel like you can play Final Fantasy whenever, but you can't play Kingdom Hearts whenever.
Sure. Well, rounding out some of this other Final Fantasy 15 news that apparently only I care about that came out of TGS.
I was the only one to talk about the footage. Don't like your hate.
Square Enix announced that Hajime Tabata is now directing Final Fantasy 15. Square Enix also said a playable demo called Episode, I don't know how to say that other word, will be available for free to those who buy Final Fantasy Type Zero HD. Nice play. The demo bundling with other games has proven to be popular. I'm sure it will for this. Maybe what I think is the biggest news is that still in terms of development, about 50 to 60% of the game is complete. Holy moly. That's kind of crazy. They still seem like they have a long way to go. So hopefully that will continue. But I do think Final Fantasy 15 will continue to be big news. My story of the week. Yes, it could be that PlayStation TV is out October 14th in the U.S. You know, I love my Vita. That's of course near and dear to my heart. I think that's very important. But my story of the week this week is a first person mode coming to GTA 5. Confirmed, then deleted, then confirmed, then deleted. It looked like Rockstar accidentally let information out of the bag early. But of course, because everything that happens on the internet gets screen captured right away, there's still evidence of this coming out and listing some of the changes that will be coming to the Xbox One, PS4, and PC version of Grand Theft Auto 5. Some of those changes included a first-person driving mode, and there'll be a speedometer and inside details of some of the cars, which, if that's in all of the cars, I think is pretty incredible, because that's a lot of, assuming they're all unique, a lot of interiors to create for the game. And then also a first-person mode when you're on foot, which I think is kind of revolutionary for the series and maybe kind of game-changing for how people will play Grand Theft Auto. I don't know if it'll make gunplay and aiming better, but in a game that's largely, for a lot of people, you know, you running around doing crazy things and just having fun in the world, I think a first person, especially in the, you know, the current gen, the Xbox One, PS4 version of Grand Theft Auto 5, and in that beautiful world they created, could seem even all that more immersive. Is that enough for you, Liz, to get you to dive into the PS4, Xbox One, or PC version of Grand Theft Auto 5, or is that not enough of a change?
I still haven't even finished the last Grand Theft Auto that I bought, so I think that it'll be interesting. I think for me, like, they'll need, like, some controversial thing to, like, come out, that, like, there's, like, some secret Easter egg that you can discover in there that would get me interested in it. I do think the perspective is cool. What I wanted to ask you, actually, is do you really think it was an accident that they leaked this, or do you think that was, like, completely planned so that people like us would talk about it right now?
Yeah, I mean, well, Rockstar certainly is media savvy, right? Like, no one knows how to slow release snippets of information in a trailer the way they do. There's certainly something to be said about the buzz that's created by something that's posted and then taken down. I think Rockstar wants this information to get out. I don't think they were, my personal opinions, I don't think they were quite ready for it to come out. I think they would have done something a little bit bigger. I feel like that's the way they often do things. I think it's funny that, you know, like an Easter egg, I think of all companies, Rockstar would maybe shy away from something like, I mean, heaven forbid, right? A first person mode comes out and then, oops, in the PC version, there's hot tea or something, right? Like not hot coffee, but some other accidental glitch still left in the game that somehow is made worse slash better, depending on what you're trying to do. Because of first person mode, like, oof, I don't know. I don't know if that's a storm that Rockstar or Take Two would want to weather. Anthony, does first person, does that grab your attention at all for GTA 5?
I don't think it's a selling point necessarily for me. I would be very interested because that's a very tricky game for Rockstar to play if they are putting this first person mode in, because that means you're getting up close and personal with a lot of the stuff that started out last gen is getting ported over to next gen. Now people are going to be able to get something that they'd never seen, like a more up close look at all these details, which could be cool. You know, it might be able to give you a new appreciation for the game, but it also, you know, could bite them hard. I'm more interested to see how much of the first person mode incorporates into other stuff. If, like you said, it's going to include combat, because the game's, it's a cover shooter. How does the cover shooter work? Well, it's not, I should say it's not like wholly a cover shooter, but you know, how does, you know, that those cover mechanics work? How does this or that work in this first person mode? Is it more just like a tourism mode where you, are just clicking into first person mode? Because I think the rumor was that you could also capture photos or videos. There was going to be some sort of element like Infamous where you could take pictures and screenshots. So maybe that's just for photos and it's not really going to incorporate into any of the gameplay itself. Like when you trigger a mission, that's going to be disabled or whatnot.
Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe it's only in what essentially is free roam mode, which Grand Theft Auto I feel like, has done a fairly good job of, granted, yes, you know, when you start a mission, you are locked in that mission. If you leave the mission parameters, it will, you know, it will tell you the mission has failed. But maybe, yeah, it's an interesting way to look at it, is if when you're around just kind of running around exploring the world, having fun, you can get into first person. But when you are in those missions, it locks you down. But there's still combat, or, you know, the potential for combat during quote unquote free roam. So sure, I don't know how that would solve their cover problem.
Does it become a first person shooter? Like, what happens? I'm very intrigued by this. Maybe the reason that they announced it and then pulled it down is because it's a patch for all the games and it's not related to these upgraded versions and they are not ready. I have no idea. Sounds interesting, though. It's not a selling point. I think the biggest selling point, as has been mentioned by lots of people before, is the PC version, to see what people can do with mods, because GTA 4 looks incredible with mods. There, people are doing incredible things. So, I mean, they could make a first person, the modders could have made a first person mode for Grand Theft Auto 5, and Rockstar wouldn't have had to put any money into that. They could keep their billions from sales.
I mean, that's what I like, I guess, about this story, is that, one, you know, we saw the footage at E3 and, you know, the changes to the environment. This isn't, it doesn't appear that GTA 5, the current gen port, or the Xbox One and PS4 PC version, is a quick, you know, up-resing re-release. Like, they're redoing assets and putting out and putting in the work. And then the addition of something like a first-person mode, you know, people complain about reissues or remasters or whatever, and it is what it is, as annoying as that trite saying is. I like seeing companies putting in the time to make it something unique and special. And I think the addition of a first-person mode to GTA 5 could be that thing that, you know, makes the game fun again for people that maybe have already played it and were looking for a reason to double dip. And maybe this is it, kind of like, you know, I know I have friends and other gamers out there that loved The Last of Us, and the main reason they decided to double dip was just to have the fun with the photo mode, with the, you know, the higher fidelity version of the game, and they've just really done some great things with it. So I think that could be cool. Some other stuff to throw out really quick before we move on. Destiny and Activision and people at Bungie have released some gameplay statistics. They say the average play session in a Destiny is 3 hours on weekdays and 4 hours on weekends. Destiny fans have played more than 100 million hours of the game. So I guess that isn't including the time that Jeff Cannata has played of the game.
That is only you. You've played 100 million and Jeff played 1 hour of the game.
Right. And since release, that sell through, they had information come out, you know, 500 million in sales, but that was to retailers. They now say there have been 325 million from individual customer purchases in Destiny. I'm curious to see where you guys fall. Anthony, we'll start with you. Quickly, we don't need to dive into this again, but where do you fall on the Destiny scale of things?
Okay. I was, yes, prepared to come in and defend you.
but why am I waiting for a but?
There's no but. I enjoy Destiny. I think I come in somewhere in the middle of you, Jeff, and Phil from last week. So I really enjoy Destiny. And I, like you, I think people should just enjoy it for what it is. It has a lot of faults. It has a lot of, you know, intricacies. But despite all those components, what I'm doing while I'm completing Destiny, I'm playing Destiny. I'm, right, you know, fire teaming with friends, and I'm saying, you know, this is dumb, or this is a poor choice, or I hate this grinding, you know, that I have to grind this out or whatever. But I'm playing Destiny. I'm still playing Destiny. Every time I have an opportunity to turn on my PS4 and I see a friend is on and they're playing, I get on, we fire team, we do stuff. So, yeah, I support you. I'm here for you.
Well, we thank you. If you didn't hate hot dogs with things on them, I would say our friendship has been restored. But as is, great, we're still. I don't know, a little bit at odds. Liz, do you come down one way or the other on Destiny?
No, not really. I'm not playing Destiny. I feel like an outsider. I mean, the only game that I actually play online is Call of Duty.
That's why I thought that you'd maybe, because, I mean, even way back in the day, You've always been a Call of Duty person, and yep. but nothing about Destiny. They didn't woo you. They didn't do enough to woo you over. You know, Activision. They didn't want to. You didn't want to stay in the Activision family and put your toe in the Bungie waters.
No, they didn't woo me over. I guess maybe you can convince me, but no, I just like to stick. I guess I just like to stick with what I like. I don't want to sound like not open minded, but you know, that's a big investment. I feel like I have a PlayStation 4, and the only game that I've bought is Infamous. Isn't that sad? I just don't feel like there are a bunch of PlayStation 4 games that interest me at this time. So I'm just waiting for the next Call of Duty so I can get back in there.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I don't think that's sad at all. I think a lot of people share that sentiment. That you know, there have been posts on NeoGAF, and there was a Reddit thread about it, as if it, this is the most disappointing launch, next gen console launch, or the you know, for early adopters. And I was trying to look online to find an easily already put together list of retail released games only for Xbox One and or PS4. So it could be for both the One and the PS4, but not for 360 or PS3. And I couldn't find a super simple list, but I feel like there aren't that many what we'll call current gen only games, you know, Infamous being one of them. And I think a lot of people share your opinion that it's just kind of like, yeah, this is fun. This is great. I like my new system, but there's nothing that is, you know, screaming out that I play it. Before we move on to what we are playing, Liz, anything else, any other stories you want to bring up before we move along? Anything else you think we need to discuss right now?
There was one thing that I wanted to discuss. I wanted to talk about the puppy dog in Metal Gear Solid.
Okay.
It made me so happy. And I was reading comments on an article about it, and people were like, oh, they're just like jumping the shark. And I feel like if they had like a companion cat, then that would be a bit extreme. But come on, it's a dog. I want to run around with that dog, and I want it to lick my face, and I want it to grow and cuddle with me. I'm like way into it.
But I mean, come on, this is Metal Gear we're talking about. I mean, we all know that you're just going to raise this dog so that it will be killed in the fourth level,
true,
right? I mean,
okay, so with the last Call of Duty, that's why I stopped playing, because I didn't like shooting dogs. That made me really sad. So, okay, maybe you have a good point. I'm so easily sold. I'm like, okay, you got it.
You like ultraviolet games, but the dog is too much?
I was just playing Silent Hill earlier today, and I saw like a dog on a bed that was like dead, and I was like, oh, I can't do it. I have to take a break. I don't know. It's weird.
I'm just going to throw this out there. You can judge me how you want, but the second the dog shows up, I'm going to see if I can shoot it.
No.
You won't
it's
be
a video
able
game.
To. Because the dog will be like, introduced in a 20-minute cutscene.
True. I mean, but running, like, you know, I just have to know, like, how deep Kojima's going to go. It's a similar thing with The Last of Us. Those giraffes showed up and everybody was probably like, oh, in awe. And I was like, I'm going to hit it with an arrow. But
really? You're a jerk.
Oh my God. My dog can hear you right now talking about this dog hate. I'm going to have to give her more turkey. It's, like, this is so
not,
sad.
It's not dog hate. I just want to know how it might impact the game. It's all right, purely. Well,
yeah, the purely. Story coming out of the TGS trailer, which you can watch online. You have a dog companion. Snake will have a supporting buddy, Diamond Dog, or DD for short. I like the way that the info that Konami released says that, you know, Diamond Dog or DD, like we wouldn't put it together if later in the game they refer to it as DD and someone's like, wait, what the heck is this dog named DD? I have Diamond Dog. And now there's DD. There are too many dogs for me to keep track of in this game. I think it's a cool addition. I don't know if it will be, you know, they've certainly tried it before, right? I think the most known example is Fable, where your companion, your dog, will make you feel love.
I tried to hit that dog with magic.
Oh my God. Are you like cats at least, or any animal?
No animals. It has nothing to do with the animals. It's just testing the limitations of the game. You know, it has more to do with that. Yeah, it's just, to me, putting a dog in is dangerous.
Anthony, how old were you when you killed your first animal? Second question, does everyone know you're a serial killer yet?
They did. My first animal was a human being.
Oh, no.
Most dangerous game.
Change topic. Any other news items you think we need to get to before we move on to the playlist?
I just want to say that the iPhone 6 launched. It was pretty successful. I got one. I'm pretty satisfied with it, if you're curious.
Are you gaming on it?
I am gaming on it, yes. It's a bigger screen. It's a little better visuals. I got the 6, not the 6 Plus, just for clarification purposes. I think it's got the support for the Metal software, so it runs games a little better. Most of the games that Apple's out there touting as having Metal support aren't that great games. But I think ultimately, you know, the device itself is a little bigger. It feels like a better gaming phone. Cool. I like it. It's nice.
Cool. Well, you're happy with it. That's good. Before we move on to the playlist, we need to thank our other sponsor making this show possible, free to you guys and supporting us. So hopefully you will consider supporting them. It's Varonis Data Anywhere, the fastest way to turn your own network shares into a Dropbox-like secure enterprise-class private cloud. You get mobile access, file synchronization, and secure third-party sharing. You give your users file sync and mobile access without changing your IT infrastructure, without moving your data, and without reconfiguring permissions. You know your file shares are secured, backed up, and reliable. Why change everything or move terabytes and files to the cloud when you can simply sync directly with your existing storage? You get to keep your data on your existing file servers or NAS. You keep your existing permissions. You can monitor and control access to files, set up rules to control access and remotely wipe devices. It syncs with Windows, Mac, OS X, iOS, and Android. Safely share files with third parties without adding them to an Active Directory, and it installs in about 30 minutes. That sounds interesting to you, we encourage you to check it out. You can check out Data Anywhere for a free 30 days with an unlimited amount of users. And as a special bonus for DLC listeners, if you visit varonis.com/DLC, that's varonis.com/DLC, you get 5 users free forever. That's right, Sandlot fans, forever. That movie's really old now. Varonis.com/DLC. Check it out. And thank you for supporting this show. With that, it's time we move on to the playlist. Still no music, guys. No music.
No music. We're done with music.
Well, no, the music will come back. I just thought it'd be fun. If there was no music, I don't know. Next week, I'll probably change my mind. No music. Chat room's probably yelling at me like, we want the music. Here we go. Moving on to the playlist. We're going to be playing, talking about things that we're playing. Because we've been playing games.
No.
Playing games.
Stop. No.
Well, you could have supported. You could have harmonized, Liz. You could have added some sweet bass.
I think I'm looking at people writing. Like, they're really into it. They're supporting you. Keep going.
Good. No.
Yeah.
No.
Hey, Anthony. Looks like everybody hates you now. Looks like I'm the guy that everybody likes. The playlist is a part of the show where we talk about what we have been playing. Also about Spotify playlists that we've created. Music that we are listening. talk about what games we are playing.
I've got a hot 80s playlist. It's got lots of Toto.
Oh, nice. Great.
Boston.
Great. Liz, we'll start with you. What have you been playing? What's on your playlist, Liz?
Oh, thank God.
Okay. So it's an older game. Surprise. Silent Hill Downpour. My husband just got it for me for my birthday because after we, did the playable trailer for the latest Silent Hill, I was just like, I need to go back. And that was just, did you guys play that trailer? It was an intense experience.
Yeah, I started it. I did not finish it. I watched it be played to completion on Twitch, and that was enough. Not enough, like, I didn't like it. Like, that's enough? Holy crap.
Man, yeah. That's such a bummer. Like, I guess replaying it by yourself, because I feel like if you're by yourself trying to figure it out, then that was just probably not a fun experience. But if you have somebody else with you and you're just kind of like looking online and trying to work it all out, then it just became this, I don't know, like this shared puzzle where it's impossible to figure out just trying to like tinker with it. And I feel like if it wasn't for my husband sitting there too, like I would have given up as well.
Sure. So how is going back to is Downpour, I forget, what system is that on? Fill us, listeners and myself, in on Downpour, the basics of Downpour.
Oh, it's on PlayStation 3, and I just started it not too long ago, so you're just, you know, same old, you're just like a dude walking around Silent Hill, you just happen to end up there. And I'm picking up objects. I'm actually really annoyed because I'm getting used to the controls and I keep throwing my knife versus like picking it up. And I keep going around flushing toilets, which is kind of annoying. I always hate it in a game where you just do these actions and there isn't any meaning, but you just keep doing them in hopes that like some treasure will pop up. Mm-hmm. But I'm just hoping that it's better than, I don't know if you guys ever played Silent Hill The Room. That's an older one too, but in that game, you couldn't actually kill the ghosts. They just froze. And so that turned me off, to Silent Hill for a while. And, but now I'm just like getting back into it because of that trailer. So that was really important to me. And then I'm also, I just finished Mario 3D Land. Did you guys play that?
Yeah. Before we dive into that, which I definitely want to talk about, I want to hang on Silent Hill a little bit. So, you know, PT gets you in back reinvigorated for the Silent Hill franchise, and then that game I thought was or that demo, the playable teaser, whatever you want to call it, was beautiful. And then stepping back to Downpour, which, you know, fans of the series, you know, some say, hey, it's a solid Silent Hill, and of course, like any long running franchise, there are many fans that it disappointed because nothing is ever as good as your memory of Silent Hill 1 and or 2, whichever one you hold near and dear to your heart. I mean, when you're playing it, aside from throwing your knife and all, are you sitting there, are there parts of the game that you hope make it into Silent Hills, or is it mostly like, this is fun experience, but I really hope Silent Hills is completely reimagined of this franchise?
Good question. You know, honestly, I just like with any like survival horror game, like I just want to be scared. I want there to be puzzles. I want to be able to just like walk around in a room for 10 minutes doing nothing, trying to like figure that out. Isn't that weird? But like, I really don't want like monsters coming at me. I just kind of like want to like poke around. So maybe I guess I'm like an easy pleaser when it comes to this game, because like so far it's like fulfilling that need for me.
Well, I like the way, and you know, I'd love to have you back on the show and we can spend more time on this, but I feel like what's great about games today is the games, and it's like earlier, you know, someone might be listening and pigeonhole you as like, oh, Liz just likes Call of Duty. She's just a Call of Duty gamer. But then the flip side of that is your favorite part of Silent Hill are the scares. And then after that, you mentioned the puzzle solving, sitting in the room and taking your time. And I feel like those two games, the Twitch reaction of a Call of Duty and spending your time examining, you know, one room for clues and tips while on the edge of your seat for jump scares are two very different styles, but obviously both games, and then still things that, you know, you would say are up your alley.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And I think that comes from like being like a scary movie fan. And also, like, I don't feel like there are enough survival horror games out there. I was really excited to hear that Fatal Frame is coming out again, because I've just waited years and years for that franchise to come back. And I guess, you know, tying it back into Kingdom Hearts, it's like, you know, since those games don't come out like every year, like a Call of Duty, it's just when they do come out, it's very special to me. And so when they come out and they're horrible, it makes me really, really sad.
Yeah, the only scary thing about most survival horror games is how bad they're going to be, I feel, in
yes.
recent years.
Yeah.
Well, that sheds light, Liz, on, we actually met, God, was it? It was like Halloween 1997, right?
Oh, God. I don't remember it that clearly, but sure.
I think it was. I think it was because we were in high school.
I was wearing blue. You were wearing red.
No, we were in high school and I'm old. I graduated in 99. Maybe it was 98 or 97, but it was around Halloween. Doesn't matter. Anthony, I remember when we met. Anthony, we met for the first time at a Bennigan's.
At a Bennigan's, yes.
Which I have not been to in probably 12 years, and you wanted to go there because you like the Monte Cristo sandwich.
I enjoy a Monte Cristo sandwich. So the Monte Cristo sandwich, real quick recap of what it is. Also, I like plain hot dogs. God, this is the worst.
Yeah, you're a human dump truck.
That sandwich is like a heart attack.
So the Monte Cristo it's a sandwich with usually ham, turkey, two types of cheese, and it gets like battered and then fried. It's basically like a French toast sandwich, but the French toast like coating is around the whole sandwich. Then they usually serve it with like some sort of sweet jam or preserves. So usually like raspberry or something. I don't really care for that. Oh, and they put powdered sugar on the top in case, you know, you weren't already concerned about my health.
Right.
When we get into what I'm playing, you won't consider me just like a morbidly obese person who only eats terrible things. But yes, the Monte Cristo sandwich at Bennigan's, it's like one of the few places you can get it.
Right. Yeah. Because
and
it's
you said
and
I could pick anywhere. So yeah, we went there. We had a Monte Cristo, and then we just became best friends.
Well, I don't know about that. I immediately was put on guard by your liking of the Monte Cristo. Before we get to the garbage that you're surely playing to support your garbage eating habits, right. Liz, you mentioned Mario. Let's dive in. This is 3D World, 3D Land.
3D Land, yeah. And I just wanted to make a brief comment about it. I am so mad that I beat the game only to learn that I have to go back through and play the special levels.
Why are you mad? Those are the best. I'm mad that I had to play the first part of the game because the special levels to me are, that's the game. They're so good.
Totally agree, yeah.
What? Oh, you guys are turning on me. I just want to be done with it. I want to be done and I want to move on. And, you know, half the time I had to use my special golden tail, raccoon tail to get past it. So I want to feel like it's completed and I can just like go on to the next thing.
Oh, okay. And that I totally understand. Too, I'm a gamer that likes to finish games, you know, get that feeling of like you're done and move on. And I could see how it'd be frustrating to be like, well, I put that down. Now let's dive into, you know, spend some time with the Smash demo, which we will talk about as all of us have played it. But I could see how that could be like, oh no, and they get hard. Some of those special levels are really, really hard, but I think they're so good. I wish that they were just peppered throughout the main game. So I think they're so much more creative than some of the original levels.
Yeah, I can agree with that, but I just feel like it's one more thing I have to do, or else I can't go to bed at night. Maybe that's my problem,
right,
not the game's
sure.
problem.
Yeah, Anthony, what's on your playlist, bud?
Okay, so two things that I think you're going to talk about, so we'll skip them. The main thing I've been playing, we were talking about it before we started recording, is Disney Infinity. Okay, here we go. So Disney Infinity : Marvel Superheroes (2.0) edition. This is the follow-up to last year's Disney Infinity. It's categorized in the Toys to Life genre. It's basically like Skylanders. You put a toy, a figure on a base, and that toy then goes into the game. And I'm playing the newest version that comes out tomorrow, actually. And it's mostly based around Marvel superheroes. So you got something like almost 20 characters from mostly the movies, like most of the characters you're familiar with, the main Avengers. It's got all the Guardians of the Galaxy and some Spider-Man characters thrown in it. I really enjoyed the first one, so I was looking forward to this one. And yeah, I've been playing a ton of it. I'm working on a review for it, but I was actually looking forward to it. I'm not just playing it because I'm reviewing it. I'm playing it because I enjoy these games.
So I feel like your description of the game also was very much just, yeah, a description for Skylanders or Disney Infinity. How is this game different? Like, what does 2.0 do other than Marvel characters?
So they did this cool thing where there's Marvel characters. In it, yeah.
I mean,
it's really hard to not just say that it's the same game with Marvel characters. It is on next gen, so hey, visuals. They did some smart additions. I don't want to diminish the effort that the developers put in. They added skill trees. They added to each character, so kind of it's worth playing with each character, not just playing with one. They added a bunch of additional creation tools for what they call the toy box mode. It's like basically a free form mode where you can create all kinds of little worlds and you can make actually games now. Like you can make if you wanted to, if you had the time, you could take this toy box mode and you could make a whole Diablo esque, like 3D isometric dungeon crawler with Marvel suit. You could basically make Marvel Ultimate Alliance.
Come on, if you want it. I feel like you're reading press release details now. There's no,
I'm not reading
this thing
press
is that robust
details.
That you're able to do that.
No, well, I mean, I'm not saying like it's you can make like Diablo length or Diablo quality or like Diablo loot, but in terms of there's an isometric creation tool, and then you can make the levels, put all these little vehicles and things like that. It's pretty robust. I think it is by far the biggest selling point of the game, but it's obviously not the selling point of the game. Lots of people are going to go out and buy this game because of Marvel characters. Yeah, and the figures are well made. So
how are the story levels? Because my fear for this game is, well, the first one, I feel like things were pretty diverse between, you know, the Assassin's Creed pirate level-esque Pirates of the Caribbean levels, the racing levels. I feel like my fear for the Marvel characters is they're all a lesser version of Lego Marvel.
Yes, you bring up a great point, and this is something that kind of jumped into my mind when I first started playing it, is that the original game was built around, so they have these things called play sets, and a play set is essentially a level, or not a level, but like your game. It's like the game within the game. So there were play sets for Monsters University and Pirates of the Caribbean, like you said, and they were all kind of diverse in what experiences they offer. Not all of them were combat focused. Some of them were a little different. Like the pirates had like some sailing stuff. Yeah, all that stuff was kind of packaged around the properties. Well, now with Marvel, you have three play sets packaged around these three different movies, but they're still superhero properties. So you're still basically doing combat. So they're they run a little more together than in the first game. So I 100% agree with that. And that is, I think, a big criticism of the game. But
so if this game wasn't, if these weren't Marvel characters, you know, getting rid of, let's say these, it was Disney Infinity 2.0 beat 'em ups, you know, is the appeal there of the game, or is really the appeal the Marvel license, and Disney Infinity 3.0 will be Star Wars license and, you know, things like that?
I think that is ultimately what they are making their bread and butter on. One thing I'd like to say about these games that I think goes unnoticed by a lot of people is that I don't mean to say it like that, but these games are really fun to play with people who aren't that into games. That is kind of a knock against somebody like if I was just playing by myself, but getting together with people who don't play games, I think, you know, eventually your daughter will grow up and you'll try and play games with her. And I think Disney Infinity will be a game that she will fall in love with. And I think there's something to be said for a game that really just is unabashedly going after kids and their obsession with collecting things and needing every toy. And props to Disney for going for that. You know, Skylanders is Skylanders, but any Skylander is not going to beat a Frozen character. Or for a little boy, like any Skylander is not going to beat Spider-Man or Iron Man or Thor.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's a property people know. I mean, Liz, you guys, you know, with Cuddles and Rage do awesome sculpting and diorama pieces. I mean, do the Skylander or Disney Infinity or now the Disney Infinity Marvel characters, as someone who creates collectibles, is that something that you think is a plus for the gaming? Is that something that interests you, or is it, you know, you make your own stuff and you have your own things going on and it's neither here nor there?
I think specifically with Cuddles and Rage, like, yeah, we kind of make our own stuff, but when we do gallery shows and there's like themed work, then yeah, we get really into like characters and stuff. And I think it's smart marketing for them, because, you know, you just get to sell the crap out of the game, and, you know, any way that, you know, you can get kids interested or even like non-gamers interested is a big plus.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and it's one thing too where, to some extent, I've seen this at a few Targets where they not only have the figures, the Skylander figures by the video games, but then they'll have a few of them also over in the action figure section, which I don't know whose idea that is, but I think it's a clever one, because especially with these Marvel figures, while they're not articulated at all, I don't know, like, you know, little statuettes. I think they look really cool. And if you get a kid interested in the figure and then they find out that it's a $60 or whatever it is, $90 starter pack video game also,
yes,
you know, anywhere you can have
$75.
$75. Thank you, Anthony. Yeah, get those in front of people. I think that's great. And that's a perfect transition to the demo we've all been playing with the Amiibo tapping into this market. Because, Anthony, you were saying a Skylander is not a Spider-Man Frozen Girl. And to some extent, absolutely, none of those things are Nintendo characters. We've all been playing the 3DS demo of Smash Brothers, which is now coming out very soon, the full game. Liz, hands-on thoughts and impressions, how much are you loving and or hating Smash 3DS so far? The demo of Smash 3DS.
I'm enjoying it. I have to confess to you guys that when I play fighting games, I'm a button pusher.
Well, Smash supports that. I mean, granted, high-level Smash is more than that, but I think you can have a lot of fun mashing while smashing.
Yeah, I just like being surprised, like, oh my god, I just did that. Oh, amazing. I like it. I was excited to see like all the different characters and stuff. Like, I really want to try and play the Wii Fit instructor and see what her special moves are. That's a little ridiculous. But I like how they just have fun with the games and the characters, and they really know their audience. And I think it'll be interesting. I've only played against the computer, so I want to sit down and play against my husband and then really see how the game plays out.
Right, yeah. I mean, the demo is very limited. It's Mega Man, Link, Mario, and Pikachu, and who's the last one, Anthony or Liz?
The Villager.
Villager, thank you. Animal Crossing Villager. Only one stage. You know, you can't even really tinker with the options. At least I haven't found... I still prefer up as jump. That's my natural Smash control. I find a button for jump, while other people like it that way, isn't how I naturally lean. I've been having fun with the demo. Anthony, what's your... I know you played it at E3. How do you feel the demo represents the game? Or is this something that gets you more excited for the game? Or are you kind of still... nothing has changed.
Okay, well, you and I have talked about this Smash Brothers. I just want to preface this by saying I like Kingdom Hearts. So I was on your side. Stay on my side. I'm not a big Super Smash Brothers fan. I played the demo begrudgingly. There were some codes going around. Somebody said, do you want one? I said, yes, please. I would like to see if this does anything for me. And unfortunately, it does nothing for me. I don't know what it is. I just can't get into Super Smash Brothers. It really doesn't do anything for me. Like,
I'm going to blabble for a little bit here so that I'm going to force you to back up your thoughts. Because you said twice it doesn't do anything for you. And I want to know why. To me, what I enjoy about Smash, and I think the 3DS version might be the least enjoyable version because of that, is I enjoy the couch co-op experience of Smash. It's chaotic, it's quick, and I know these games are different, but I get the same feeling from them of like a Power Stone, even a Tower Fall to some extent, where it's quick and things are happening and you're giving your friends a hard time. And I think the game on every console, I think Smash has always been a beautiful game of that console generation. I think the 3DS version with the stroke outline around the characters is really cool. I think it looks great. I think it looks better in motion than screenshots make it look. And I enjoy that it is pick up and play friendly, but also has the depth. And I like what Nintendo has typically done to provide, not the same way Mortal Kombat or Injustice has a single player mode, but it's fun and enjoyable. So quickly now, what do you not like about Smash?
The gameplay itself is just, I don't know, it's fine. It's to me, it seems like kind of a watered down fighting game. I'm going to go out on a limb and say something here, and I firmly believe this. Nobody wants to admit it, but I think that the appeal of Smash to a lot of people, not to everybody, I'm not labeling everybody, is that since Nintendo takes so long to make these games, it's getting to see these characters before their games come out. So getting to play as Link before a Zelda, because the waits for Zelda are just way too long. Or getting to play as Pit because they hadn't made a Kid Icarus up until, you know, a little bit ago. And so I think that that's some of the appeal to some people. That's my personal feeling. So lots of people disagree with me. And that doesn't, you know, I'd rather play Zelda. I'd rather play Mario. Taking control of Link and then doing non-Link combat is not exciting to me.
And yeah, I think there's truth to what you're saying. I think that's why Hyrule Warriors, well, one, it's getting, you know, it's received very good reviews. So it's play there, or even if it's just people experiencing Dynasty Warriors gameplay, you know, tweaked and improved upon, perhaps, or Zelda-ized. But I think part of the reason the excitement behind that game is the Zelda-ness of it. And I think you're right. People love these characters, and it's fun to see them, you know, fighting against each other. But I think it does the game a disservice to just, you know, throw it away as like a simplistic fighter or whatever. I think the game has its legions of fans for a reason.
I'm not throwing it away. Like, I totally understand. Like, I watch Evo every year. I watch all events. I see the guys that are crazy good at Super Smash Brothers, and I appreciate it. And I should also say that I'm an only child, so a lot of the co-op stuff for me, like, I had to get friends over to play it. But even then, like, none of us got into it. It just didn't.
You had no friends because you like playing hot dogs.
Fair enough. That you're the worst. just as far as like, maybe it requires clicking with not just you, but also with your friends.
Sure. That totally makes sense.
It never clicked with me. It never clicked with my friends, and they really haven't done much to change the game. They added new characters and they've kind of added some tweaks, but it's still pretty familiar. They're not going to go reinventing the wheel. And like Zelda. I like all those franchises. I'd rather just play those games.
Yeah
but do you like Mortal Kombat? Do you like any fighting game?
I do. I enjoy pretty much across the board just fighting games in general. Just Smash Brothers doesn't happen.
Okay. You know, they need to add like fatalities.
yeah, exactly.
That'd be fun.
The fireball needs to consume. Well, this is the perfect time of the show where, Anthony, you can give out your Twitter handle and then people can send you hate tweets. Don't do that. Send him constructive criticism tweets as to why condiments should be on hot dogs.
I mean, remember that I was behind Kingdom Hearts.
No one remembers that you like Kingdom Hearts. People only remember you like playing hot dogs and that you think Smash Brothers is the worst game ever to be made, and anyone who likes Smash is an idiot. While Jeff is away honeymooning it up, he is now married. It is now 4 N's and 2 T's out gallivanting around Italy, eating delicious food all day. I can only imagine the amount of gelato, delicious gelato, being consumed. Tabletop time. Jeff actually, as you mentioned last week, has pre-recorded some awesome interviews that are going to drop in Tabletop Time. If you are listening live, those are going to play live for you guys right now. So keep listening, stay on the stream. Those are going to happen. But like any good Table Time, I am going to check out because I have nothing to add. No, Jeff has a great piece that we're going to drop in on Tabletop. He has some great interviews. But of course, before we go to that, I want to thank Liz and Anthony for being on the show. Thank you guys so much for taking the time. Liz, where can people keep up with you and all the wonderful things you and Jimmy are doing over at Cuddles and Rage?
Hey, thank you for having me. Yeah, I'm at Cuddles and Rage on pretty much everything, like Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Facebook. So yeah, you can check us out there.
Awesome. Very cool. And great web comics. Awesome humor. If people, you know, I encourage you guys to check it out. I've been a fan of what you guys have been doing over at Cuddles and Rage for a long time. And I think people, you know, the gamer audience will really appreciate a lot of the humor that you guys have. It's snarky, self-deprecating, wholesome, honest, all of the above. And it's really great. Anthony, where can the people keep in touch?
Well, first I'd like to say, you know, thank you, Spicer, for having me on. You're a true friend, and congratulations to Jeff, of course. I think it gets lost in you being the nemesis, but you are You are very, you have always supported me in everything I do. And so with that being said, all the things that I do that you have supported me, we met through Game Rant. So you can read me on GameRant.com. I also did things, box office related, some DVD reviews for ScreenRant.com. And then I do film reviews for a site called FilmFracture.com. And then you can follow me on Twitter. I'm going to spell my Twitter handle because it's really hard to find. So if please follow me. I would love for you to follow me. But it's at @AntorMina.
Awesome. And super, super quick, because we got to pitch to this Jeff thing. Liz, your parting gift for the people.
Oh, awesome. Yes. Quickly, I just interviewed people I think are cool, Pat Kelly recently, and he just came out with an indie comic called Scout, which you can buy for 99 cents on Indie Planet. And it's basically a little graphic novel that's like, the way I describe it is if Wes Anderson directed a Twin Peaks episode. It's really awesome and dark and beautiful.
Awesome. And that's Pat Kelly's comic Scout. You can find it on Indie Planet. Anthony, super quick, your parting gift, sir.
Watch Sleepy Hollow. It's on Fox on Monday nights. If you haven't seen it, catch up on Netflix. I like it.
Awesome. That is a very quick one. Mine is make something with your hands. I think maybe Liz having you on inspired me to just say, as gamers, we play stuff that other people create for so long, so much of our day, and take the time to create something yourself. You don't have to be good at it. It doesn't have to be amazing, but take the time to create. Get your hands dirty, even if it's just coding. I think that there's something really valuable that comes from that, and I encourage people to do that. Liz, Anthony, you guys, thank you so much. And now,
thank
Mr.
you.
Jeff Cannata, pre-recorded with some Table Time action. Enjoy.
So as you're hearing this, I am now married and cavorting through the Italian countryside on my honeymoon, but I could not let an episode go by without Tabletop Time. And I'm happy to say I managed to get a fantastic guest to join me. He's one of the hosts of one of my favorite, one of the best board gaming shows on the web, Shut Up and Sit Down. I have Mr. Quentin Smith here. Welcome, Quentin.
Hello, Jeff. How's it going?
Well, should I have said Quentin instead of Quentin? Did I do that wrong?
No, Quentin is great. Or Quinns.
Quinns,
yes. It's up to you.
I love your show. I love Shut Up and Sit Down. You guys do such an awesome job. You make reviewing things more than just reviewing things. It's you delve into narrative. You make you share your joy of gaming in all its forms, as I try to do as well. And I'm just a big fan, so I'm really excited to be talking to you.
Oh, wow, that's so kind of you. You know, on the board game Reddit threads, people always say that Shut Up and Sit Down, you know, they often fail to explain rules, and that's something I think people are disappointed by, but they do say that we get across what a game feels like to play, which I think is more important, but then I might be biased.
No, I agree with you 100%. That's kind of what I try to do. Yeah, you can get mired down in the rules explanation, but it's about these experiences. It's about the camaraderie of sitting across the table with somebody. So, yeah, I agree.
Absolutely. No, it's crazy how many board games. Well, one of the reasons we started Shut Up and Sit Down is the amount of board game and table gaming reviews out there where it's, you know, 14 minutes of someone explaining the rules and then 1 minute at the end where they go, yeah, this game's amazing. You should all buy it. And it's like, No, that's not how it works. I want to know if a game, like how every rule makes me feel, what kind of decisions I'm going to have to be making, all of that good stuff.
And you do a fantastic job of that. But let's delve into that now. What are some of the games that are giving you the best experiences lately?
Well, just yesterday, I think I was up rather too late playing the new edition of Dungeons & Dragons. That's the fifth edition, although I think they've just rebooted it to be called D&D, right? Is that
right.
Something you guys have been talking about recently?
Yeah, definitely. I got the starter set, and my buddies just got the player's handbook, and I've been DMing. We just finished up our fourth edition campaign, which have been going for weeks and weeks and months. But,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so we're excited to jump into fifth edition. We haven't started a new campaign quite yet, but did you play one of the starter adventures or something more?
Yeah, we played the starter adventure, but with the player's handbook, so everybody got to design their own characters, which took a bit of time, but I've just been so impressed by it. It's just the smoothest, easiest role playing I've done, like maybe ever, you know, but
wow.
Fundamentally because of the way character design works, where you're a fighter and at level one, the game says, okay, you can do this and this. And then every time you level up, it unlocks essentially new rules. Mm-hmm. So it's like a plane taking off or something. You just slowly gather speed. And then suddenly you've got this fleshed out character with all these fancy rules and options in combat. It just works. And it's so easy.
Well, from listening to you guys, I know that both of you are fans of sort of older editions, right? You weren't fans of fourth edition so much.
Well, no, I think for us, Dungeons and Dragons is, you know, exploring a dungeon, having a really tense combat and having nemesis and all that. That's a huge part of it. But what we really enjoy the role playing, you know, I mean, as you might guess from the show, there's a sort of like really bad amateur dramatic streak in everyone on Shut Up and Sit Down. So I think the opportunity to explore characters and kind of maybe ethical decisions sometimes and villages and problem solving, puzzle solving has always been kind of a palate cleanser for us with Dungeons and Dragons. And so the focus on combat in third edition and more so in fourth edition was kind of lost us. And we ended up playing other stuff.
Yeah, I would agree with you that the real strength of 5th edition seems to be its emphasis on role-playing, on incentivizing storytelling, on incentivizing and taking, you know, the grid away sometimes and making it a real advantage to think the way your character thinks. And I love that about it.
One of my players was going over all the things you can buy in 5th edition. He was looking at the chart and he says the same thing like, why does anyone need a bell? Why can I buy a bell? And it's like, well, maybe someday you'll find a use for that. Just use your imagination.
Yeah.
Use that bell to defeat the orcs, because that's way cooler than just rolling an attack dice over and over again.
Yeah, that's something that I've talked about a lot on this show is the guys that I play with, and I DM my group, but the guys that I play with all started with video games. And mm-hmm. video games tell you the rules and tell you not just the rules of the game, but the rules of the universe. And you're always seem to be asking yourself with a video game, am I doing what the video game wants of me? And I've found that it's hard to break people out of that and realize you could do anything. You have full – we're improvising this. So go where you want to go. Go crazy. Make up something. Do something. That's where this is better than a video game.
No, absolutely. You know, it's funny because I had a group – the D&D group I had was some veteran role-playing gamers. But one guy who came in it from a sort of card game and video game background – and the one part of the whole 8-hour thing we played that he found disappointing was the village, which was so funny to me because the village for me was just GMing it was just this playground. And I had some players flirting with the wives of kids they saved and putting on performances at the inn and like taking on local ruffians, finding work. And he was just bored out of his mind because to him, he just didn't know what to do. It was like, right. Well, is there something to kill? What's my objective? And the answer is that's no, this is. You know, when you have like free period or something at school and you're just meant to run around and like do stupid stuff.
Yeah.
But he couldn't see that, which was interesting.
So you DM'd this adventure?
Yeah, I did. It was actually the adventure that comes in the starter kit, the Mines of Phandalin, where the players are looking for a long lost gnomish dwarven mine. But I made tweaks. I went through the adventure book. I thought it was all quite strong, but I took every single quest, every dungeon, and added kind of a twist. I kind of wanted to subvert people's expectations, you know?
What do you think – one of the things that's intimidating to me a little bit about 5th edition is it seems to require a lot more prep time from the DM. Did you find that to be the case? I mean, obviously you did a lot of extra work, but what do you think about that?
Compared to 4th edition of just there are some monsters and you move them around, is that what you mean?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I liked about 4th edition was that I didn't have to pre-prep the monsters. Everything I needed was in that little box, and I didn't mm-hmm. have to really worry about that part too much. I got to focus on the storyline and making that what I wanted, and the combat I could just kind of jump into blind or semi-blind. But it doesn't seem to be the case with 5th edition.
No, it's not. I think it's very much back to that. I'm fine with this, but back to the games master as kind of sitting in their house beforehand and designing a grand adventure and coming up with twists and problems. And that's never been a problem for me because I think usually there's going to be one person in any given group who likes the idea of doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, one person who wants to craft a little story and drop the players into it like, you know, rats in a maze, but hopefully a nicer analogy than that to run around and see what they'll do or how they'll react.
Since we're on the topic of tabletop role-playing, I've been enjoying your episodes talking about the Star Wars RPG.
That's an interesting one. You haven't played that, have you?
I haven't. That's why I bring it up. I want you to tell me a little bit about... I've heard you guys play it, but what is your experience in juxtaposing, you know, D&D proper?
Well, this is kind of a preview of our review, I guess. So people might have seen that they... Fantasy Flight have put out this whole series of new Star Wars role-playing books, one of which is a whole core rule book if you want to play a campaign where you're smugglers and chancers trying to, you know, like get out of debt and deal with your drug habits and all this stuff. Another book if you want to play Soldiers of the Rebellion, and a third book, which is going to come out in just a bit, about playing Force-sensitive exiles. You can't call them Jedis anymore, not after Disney took the license, because canonically there's only three Jedi.
Oh, wow.
So it's an entire role-playing book where you play Force-sensitive exiles.
the more sensitive, the better.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, actually, the funny thing is, though, we were playing that and kind of enjoying it. It has this custom dice and seems to have a lot of depth. But playing D&D 5th edition has actually really turned me against it, because I've realized just how clumsy it is.
Interesting.
Like, it's crazy the degree to which D&D 5th edition streamlines everything. So an example of what I'm talking about is when you build characters in the Star Wars role-playing game, you have just a flat number of points. It says you've got 100 points. You can put them in your career. You can put them in this skill tree. You can put them in your skills, your stats. You can gain another career if you want. That's 40 points. And you have no idea how to build your character.
Wow. So you're just kind of putting stuff in blind and hoping for the best.
Yeah, you are. And so what my group ended up doing is they kind of started not having spent the experience. And so the whole first session was they come to a door and none of them can open it because they need mechanics. And a player at that point says, oh, well, my character will be good at mechanics, and dumped a bunch of points into that, which was awkward, but okay.
That's how I play video games sometimes. It's like I just leave the unspent points and then go to a situation where I need that.
Oh, no, see, I can't do that. If I'm playing, like, I don't know, Dishonored or something, I immediately get the points, spend them, and then can't do anything ever. but one system in Star Wars Edge of Empire, which is the one we're playing, the sort of smugglery one that I do like, is that you're all, you know, criminals, Han Solo types. And so the really important thing you decide on in character creation is you've got something that motivates you. The game asks, why are you doing this? Why are you putting your life at risk? Mm-hmm. And so your character can pick something or roll from a chart. Maybe they're in debt. You know, maybe they want to get out of the game. Maybe they have a drug habit. And this is a number that you get. So in addition to leveling up, you have this thing that you're always trying to make smaller. So Let's say you're on a, you know, some mission and you're going to steal a shipment of drugs or spice or something. And you do it, but you end up causing a ton of collateral damage and have to pay off a bunch of, like, Imperial stormtroopers or something. Then in doing so, you've leveled up, sure, but your debt has also gone up. And it's this sort of creeping thing that your group is trying to deal with so that the huts don't come for you and, you know, rob you or whatever.
That's cool. That's cool from a storytelling perspective. It also sounded like the game is based on almost probabilities, right, of... It's not a pass-fail system. It's more like you did this 70%, and so then the DM sort of has to figure out what that means as far as...
Yeah, so it's interesting because you get to play with all these absolutely gorgeous custom dice. I mean, holding them is like holding like the contents of a bag of Skittles or something, but bigger. And so, yeah, you have this system which doesn't even use numbers. It's like, let's say your skill at something is 3 and your stat is 2, then you'll roll 1 green dice and 2 yellow dice, and then it's difficulty 3, so you put in 3 purple dice, and you roll this massive handful of Skittles across the table. You read the results like reading tea leaves or something, and the GM goes, okay, you failed the check, but you have good luck, which means, and as a GM, you have to figure out what that means. So right. Maybe you didn't succeed at shooting the guy, but maybe you scared him a little bit. And actually, it's one of the ways where I haven't been that impressed by the Star Wars role-playing system, because it comes up with this system and all these dice and all these rules, and you learn them. But the end result is you roll the dice, and then the game says, and then the GM does something cool.
You're right.
And then the GM invents what this stuff means, which isn't as elegant as, you know, some systems I've seen.
Well, I'm going to bring up another thing that I heard you talk about on your show, and I urge people to go listen to this episode, because it completely fascinated me as somebody who, on this side of the pond, doesn't seem to have an opportunity to do it, and that is these mega games. I want to do that so bad. I more than anything, I was like, how much would it cost for me to just fly over to London and do that? Tell our listeners about what that is.
Oh my God. So this is crazy. This is a group of UK people call themselves the Mega Game Makers. And they've been going since the 80s. And I think we were the first kind of modern tabletop-y blog to really give them some proper coverage. Because now, as a result of our coverage, there's a New York Mega Gamers Society. So maybe you'll be able to get to the other coast and do that stuff. There's an Australian Mega Game Society now. And what these games are large-scale board games of these people's own design, really. So we played and did an episode on Watch the Skies, and what people need to imagine is every country in the world is being controlled by a team of four players. Large countries, I was saying. So me and my friends were controlling Japan in a sort of simulation of the world where 12 other players controlled some aliens who arrived on Earth, and another player controls the world media, and then it has sort of loose simulations of the UN and global warfare. And basically, it's a model UN designed by nerds. But every single one of these mega games is different. So you might find yourself controlling a bunch of sort of Mediterranean powers after Alexander the Great was killed. You might find yourself, and this sounded interesting to me, they were telling me about a mega game which was all players controlled officers and generals in World War One along this same front of trench warfare. And I was saying to the designer, well, but surely that's less interesting than mega games we were playing because there's no politics. Players aren't talking to each other. And he replied, oh, no, politics always happens. Even when players are all on the same side, controlling the same army, there's incredible politics because everyone has their own agenda, whether that's getting home safe or getting medals or, you know, maybe they're incompetent and they're following, you know, just the thing that will get them the most booze while they're on the front. It's anything these guys do sounds fascinating.
I am so hooked on this idea. When I was in high school, we did, you know, like model UN and model state government. And this was always what I hoped it would be. Instead of, you know, hashing out the, you know, the local traffic laws, I wanted to be working on alien invasions. You know, that's the dream. Do the systems enable the role playing, or do you have to bring a lot of it on your own?
The systems do enable the role playing because actually the way these games are run is there are some floating games masters. So there's, you know, maybe six or seven people wandering around this room of 40 other people. And if you want to do anything in particular, like, I don't know, in the World War One game, the game itself is moving units around on a board, but you can go up to any of the games masters and say, this evening I'm going to shoot my commanding officer. And the GM will come up with a role for that on the spot. So it's kind of like just any sort of pen and paper role-playing game where you can say to the GM, I want to do this, and the GM has to roll with it. But, you know, done quite loosely and quite quickly. And the consequences of that are really just, as long as you are okay to give these GMs the authority to do it, then you can do anything. And it's fascinating. It's so cool.
And how did they work as a team? I mean, if you introduce something that they didn't think about beforehand, Do they have license to kind of go off script? And then if so, what are the other three DMs doing?
Well, you know? I think this is the reason that the mega games only ever last probably about 7 hours, and then you just have to stop them. Because at that point, it's, you know, it will have traveled so far in a direction that the GMs weren't expecting. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think that's why these things are probably quite difficult to run. I mean, the New Yorkers and the Australians who've now started their own mega game societies are actually in talks with the UK Society of Mega Gamers as to how to run this thing, because it's this bizarre art. But I love this. I love seeing sort of lessons in role-playing games mixed with board games, mixed with now video games we're seeing with board games like the new XCOM game that uses an app. I love just anything breaking out of its kind of sphere and taking on other lessons from elsewhere. I think that this is one of the most exciting things happening in gaming right now.
Yeah, I like I said, I'm dying to try it. Maybe I'll head out to New York to try it. Since you brought up XCOM, you had an opportunity to play it at Gen Con, right?
Yeah, we did. And it's great. I mean, we're totally jumping all over here in terms of conversations. But that, like, I mean, that's why board gaming is so exciting now. There is so much to talk about.
Yeah.
But yeah, we played the new XCOM game, and it's so good. It's actually great. It was a finished prototype that we played, and anyone who likes XCOM or board games and likes the sound of a co-op XCOM board game can look forward to it wholeheartedly, because they've made a great game that borrows from all the sort of color and themes of XCOM, but actually is just cut from this whole new cloth, and it's totally different.
Yeah, the integration of the app just sounds fascinating. Usually I'm sort of turned off by that kind of blurring of the line, just because it seems to be, you know, it's not peanut butter in my chocolate. It's more like pickles in my chocolate. But in this case, it seems to really work.
I think that makes sense because a lot of, you know, companies in the past have kind of forced their way into combining apps with, you know, board games or video games that have a physical component. I think in the 90s and early noughties, that would, the push to do that was from probably marketing and management, whereas what we're seeing now is board game designers who go, no, actually, I want to introduce an app because I can do all this cool stuff with it.
Yeah.
I mean, so in XCOM, the way it works is you all have different jobs. Like one of you is the head scientist. One of you controls the squads of little plastic soldiers you've got. But the person who controls the app is kind of the communications officer, and things pop up. So it'll say, tell the scientist to, tell the scientist to decide on what goes in project slot number one. And he has 10 seconds. And you just tap the app when they're done. And any time that they have or don't have left over carries over into the next thing. So the joke we said on our podcast is, you know, someone will be told, organize the budget. You've got 3 seconds. They have to do that. And the budget in itself is a great mechanic. All it is anytime you want to deploy a scientist, an interceptor, or a soldier, that obviously, just like in real life, costs $1 billion.
Oh, right.
And the person organizing the budget has to watch how much everyone else is spending during these time limits. Because if the budget, if you go over budget, then the world starts panicking.
That's awesome. I love this, and I love. I'm excited to get my hands on that as well. I'm just picking your brain on all the stuff that I haven't gotten a chance to play yet.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I mean, it's not that much of a surprise that XCOM strong because it was. It's Eric Lang, I think, has certainly has co-designer credits on it, and he designed Chaos in the Old World. If people played that.
Is there anything he's not working on right now? It seems like his name is on everything that I've heard about lately.
Fantasy Flight definitely they work their designers pretty hard. They have an interesting work ethic. No one else manages to get quite that much out of their designers. So yeah, that's really impressive stuff.
So what is as far as actual board games? What? Like, I know we're halfway through the year. Do you have an early contender for your game of the year or favorite so far?
Well, board game of the year is hard, Jeff, because, I mean, you know this. It's tricky because board games will get early release in 2013, yeah. And then does that mean they came out this year? So I think because Shut Up and Sit Down is a lot of things, but it's never particularly timely or, you know, useful for the board game scene. So probably our game of the year will be the game that we happened to play this year, even if it came out.
Well, that's fair enough.
Maybe. I mean, I think.
I mean, I know that a lot of people's game of the year last year. And one of my favorite games of last year, Caverna, you did not care for.
No, I think with Euro games and really sort of difficult, those kind of heavy economic clockwork games, they feel just similar enough that in my job in reviewing them, I'm actually quite tired of them now.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that keeps me going in board games and allows me to continue to love them, despite the fact that I have to play so many every week, is the ones that let me put the focus on my friends, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And with games like Caverna, I mean, they are obviously phenomenally designed, beautiful things. You're designing this great cave network full of dwarves, and you've got goats now, and the goats are reproducing, and it's great. But in terms of staying power, it's the games that let me play with my friends, that let me look my friends in the eye and create new stories. That's the stuff that keeps me playing board games.
Well, I, you know, a lot of people listen to my show and look for recommendations of games to play, but I know that I dropped the $70 on Terra Mystica entirely because of your show and have no regrets there.
That's lucky. That's lucky. I'm glad because that sentence could have gone one of two ways. How are you finding Terra Mystica?
It's awesome. I love it. I really dig it. And I've gone so far as to invest in there's a guy on Etsy making custom overlays. So all your stuff just drops into little trays on top of your personal player board. Really, really elegant and cool.
And as far as pimping board games goes, I got sent the best prop for my new D&D campaign, which is an Australian company that called Campaign Coins, and they sell fantasy currency that you can buy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whenever my group of heroes defeat, you know, a goblin and check its pockets, I've reach behind my screen and throw a handful of coins onto the table.
I love that.
So heavy, so beautifully made. But yeah,
the goblin literally explodes coins.
The goblin bursts into the money. It's so funny. Actually, because of the coins and because they're so nice, when my players got to the inn and the innkeeper's like, it'll be a silver piece each night for a modest room, they were like haggling with him and trying not to let go. And I had to be like, guys, this is the least heroic thing I have ever seen.
It's the frugal heroes.
Yeah, they'll learn. I really hope they'll learn. It was good, though. They did give some of their money that they've made in the adventure to rebuild the inn that burned – a separate inn that burned down for different reasons, not because they didn't want to pay their bill.
Awesome. Well, I don't want to let you get too far away from this idea of one of your – at least one of your favorite games that you've played in the last few months.
Sure. I was hoping to get back to that because I do probably want to mention Dead of Winter.
Mm.
Have you had a chance to play this one yet?
I have, yeah. I got a copy from Colby, and it is fantastic, yes.
Yeah, it's interesting. We just finished filming our review, and that'll be going up. Well, I'm not sure when this will be live, but our review is probably up by the time this is live now. And yeah, it's just clever. And the thing that we say in it is that there are a lot of games, obviously, that have, you know, big stacks of events and sort of throw bits of story at you like popcorn and kind of leave it to the players to work it out. But what I really like about Dead of Winter is that when you play something like Arkham Horror, you know, or Tales of the Arabian Nights, these big storytelling games, they never always make, you know, there are always bits that don't make sense. You know, there's always like the guy who, you know, runs into the house to kill a zombie with a shotgun and somehow just dies immediately in the least heroic way or whatever. What I love with Dead of Winter is that the game and the story has a sense of humor. You know, it's dark and it's so serious and so gritty, and yet the designers are smart enough that they know if they put jokes in there, suddenly players will be laughing with the game when it doesn't work, you know? And it doesn't undermine the story at all, to the fact that one of your survivors who's driving cars and raiding the library looking for the right books is a dog.
Right.
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't at all.
And you can load that dog up with guns and set him loose.
We're big friends with Bored With Life, and they did a Let's Play video where they had a Crossroads card that came up, and it was soldiers burst into the grocery store, and they pinned down, and it happened to be the dog. And they were saying to the dog, you got to keep this area safe. We'll give you these rifles. But, you know, if you don't, we'll come to get you. It's just masterful. It's like there's so much love and attention to detail poured into this really believable, cold-hearted zombie apocalypse. And listening to Plaid Hat talk about the future Crossroads games they've got coming is so exciting.
Yeah, I have a feeling that as that series continues, the zombie one will be my least favorite.
Me too. Well, I was sad as well because they talked about all the possible settings for future Crossroads games, and you know, they had such interesting stuff, but one of them was just lost in outer space. It was the most generic of the five, and of course that ends up getting the most votes, because, I don't know, do gamers just want kind of what they're familiar with? Do they think, oh, I love space, I love Dead Space, that's cool, rather than letting these guys experiment with new really cool ideas?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, let me ask you a little bit about the Crossroads cards, though. I think my only complaint, because they're so cool, is that they happen so infrequently, you know, and you're sitting there wanting – you want it to happen, or you're hoping it happens. And there's so many that are character specific, and it's like, oh, well, this isn't possible to even happen this turn because these characters are long gone or whatever. I would love them to be more frequently impactful.
Well, I mean, one thing that you could do is if you pick what characters are going to be in your game, you could go through the Crossroads deck picking out only the cards for those characters, which would easily, you know, double or triple the likelihood of them happening. I mean, if you're willing to do that work. But for me, I think it's okay. I get what you're saying, because they are so exciting when they happen.
Right.
And then every turn you look at the card and it's like, is this awesome thing going to happen? No, it's not.
Right.
But that's okay. I think they happen and still, even despite the amount that you have to throw away, I think the amount of times they happen in a game is okay. I think if weird stuff was popping off every turn, maybe the challenge of, you know, actually building the barricades and getting the stuff you need might become annoying. Like, it would get in the way of what's otherwise actually a pretty decent co-op game.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it does make them more special when they do happen, and it allows the designers to make, when they happen, be a much bigger swing of event. You know, it's much crazier things can happen.
Yeah, I mean, some of them are just so awful when they happen.
Yeah.
It's it can be bad. But no, I think, Jeff, that you should go through that deck and you should rig a game where they happen more often, because you bought that board game. And this is the great thing about board games. You can just cheat.
I would not have thought of that on my own, but now I think I might try it.
One thing I will say that I am excited about is the theme I was most excited about in Crossroads, which was they were talking about doing a Crossroads game set underground. And that is happening. And I was talking to one of the designers of Dead of Winter, and he was telling me a bit about it. And the gist just sounds awesome. I'm sure they won't mind me saying a bit of what they're working on right now.
Yeah.
But the idea is kind of like the movie Pitch Black, and the group only has one light source. And so all of your characters have to travel together through this underground cave network. But if you find other light sources or the politics change, then you can split the party, and it's... But it's all about you have to stay with the light, and if you don't, then you're in trouble. But that's exciting, not just because it sounds like a cool idea for a game, but because it shows just how different they're going to make all of the Crossroads games. They just want to be inventive, and that's so awesome.
Yeah, super awesome. And it's like they got the zombie one out of the way. that one could be a big hit, and now we can move on.
You know what? I saw the other day, there's a fan mod. I think they called it Grey of Winter for some reason. I'm not sure why, but all it does is they've got some wolf standees, and all you do is replace the zombies with wolves. And actually, the theme, it's not a zombie game anymore, you know, because players can still get bitten if you roll the bitten result on the dice, and maybe the wolf keeps going. Then suddenly, you're just playing a game where there's shitloads of wolves outside.
And you're just passing rabies to each other instead
of... That works! Yeah, rabies, there you go. And suddenly it's not a zombie game. Job done.
Awesome. And it's exactly what you say. It's a game that's more about the storytelling, the experiences you have across the table with people, rather than and just manipulating mechanics. So
You know what's funny as well? The story in it is so strong that I've seen a lot of weird stuff when I play it to do with players sort of tweaking their own objectives. So what I'm thinking of specifically is we played it and Paul was the betrayer. And Paul's betrayer objective was we have to fail what we're trying to do as a group. And also, he needed a ton of food. Mm-hmm. So Paul's just stockpiling food cards for the whole game, secretly. Mm-hmm. We figured out he was the betrayer, maybe. But then at the very end, when we realized the game was going to end, we just weren't going to finish it in time, Paul knew he wouldn't finish his objective either because he didn't have enough food. So he drew a Crossroads card, which meant he got a horse. He found a horse. And he rode back to our colony and just dumped all of the food in the public supply because he knew he wouldn't do it. So
amazing.
Even though he didn't want us to succeed, he didn't want us to die, so he just gave us all the food.
Amazing.
That wouldn't necessarily happen if the story and the theme wasn't so strong, but we all knew it was the right thing for him to do. It was very cool.
Very cool indeed. Well, this has been an awesome discussion with you about board games. I'd love to have you back sometime to talk video games as well, but in the meantime, tell our audience where they can find your stuff.
We live at www.shutupandsitdown.com, and we publish podcasts, written articles, and news and weekly videos about board games, where we try and do the hobby justice, because it's so, so cool. And if you want to watch anything to do with board games, pen and paper role-playing games, or just weird projects that people are doing, we love covering that, and we'd love to see you there.
Yeah, I can't recommend it higher enough, guys. Even their news articles are extremely entertaining to read, and its videos are fantastic. So definitely don't let that go by without checking it out. Thanks a lot, Quentin. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Jeff. This was great. I'd love to come back sometime.
Awesome.